Good evening and welcome. According to the Buddhist way of thinking, teachings have a completely different perception or way of thinking about death. And it's far from being a subject to be shunned or avoided. Is it getting easier? I mean, I think that's one of the things that we could probably ask ourselves. Is it getting easier to hear or talk about death? And so that's what we're trying to do. We're practicing. Practicing of letting go completely. Remember Ajahn Chah said, if you let go a little, you have a little happiness. If you let go more, you have more happiness. If you let go completely, then you'll have complete happiness. So I wonder if that's maybe true with our last breath. But again, we might find ourselves interfering. We talked about this last week of how being in the present moment is complete happiness if we don't add our true sense worth. So it seems like that's going to be pretty difficult. And so I want to practice. I want to practice dying when I'm still breathing. And it's not easy, as you well know. But death knowledge is the key that unlocks the mystery of life. You know, it's all inclusive. You know how we like to divide life up. Well, that's our mind that's saying, okay, I want this. I want this part of life. No, I want this part of life. Being selective is practicing control. It's not releasing. It's not letting be. So death knowledge is important. And the teachings say it through that understanding, then we have more understanding about life. Well, it makes sense, doesn't it? Because of the fact that it's all inclusive. And one of the things that we're trying to establish within ourselves is it's all grist for the mill. It's all valuable. The good, the bad, and the ugly. And so death is part of the process of life in the larger sense. And so I find myself really feeling a deep sense of gratitude for hearing from someone who knows. And others who understand how we can prepare ourselves to let go of it all and not interfere in the process. So in another sense, life and death have two ends of the same process. And if you understand one end of the process, we can also understand the other end. We've had the beginning of life. Now we're living life. And so the last process of life is death. So we're studying how to prepare for that. And that's no easy thing to do, as you well know. In Stephen's book, Stephen Levine, one of our first teachers, in his book, One Year to Live, he says there's four, maybe five, things that we can begin to focus on or to practice that moves us in that direction of knowledge, of understanding, of wisdom. And so last week we talked about a couple of them. So I'm going to finish that, the rest, to this evening. But if you remember last week, he said gratitude. And we talked about that there are 10,000 sorrows with 10,000 joys. But somehow we're conditioned to hang on to the sorrows and kind of skip over the joys. And so where's the equanimity? We're lopsided, in a sense. So our appreciation for life is important. And it brings balance to those parts within us that have cultivated attachment to our suffering. Don't be messing with my suffering. That's important. Well, in a sense, you're right. Don't be messing with your suffering. But to cultivate attachment to our suffering creates a sense of we're being victimized. And we're not. We're not. We're living our lives, but we just don't quite understand all of it. And so the right effort is what we're all trying to do. It is a deeper understanding. We're doing that on a daily basis, finding out what's going on within. And so that helps us live. It helps us live a happier life if we practice. But seems like a gratitude could be turned into attachment, which causes a lot of suffering. But Stephen says, actually, it's the very opposite. And gratitude is the highest form of acceptance. Doesn't mean you have to like it. Doesn't mean that that something's wrong with our initial response of I like it, I don't like it, I feel neutral. It doesn't matter how we feel about that anyway, because it just happens quite naturally. It's nature kicking in. But then how do we relate to that part of nature? So we've got to have some kind, some acceptance to explore non-acceptance. And that's what we're doing. If we learn nothing but that resistance that causes us suffering, it'd be a huge step. And I've gotten to, and I've told you this before, to the point that I'm beginning to see the things I say and do has, because I'm paying attention to it and I'm setting an intention, how it feels in the body. Because the body will tell you the truth. It's not coming from the mind. It's not Pollyanna. But the body has a response to these kinds of suffering that we create for ourselves. So it's important to eradicate, or at least to be more open to our fear of dying. And we've done that. And then the other thing that we mentioned last week was mind states. And Stephen says, just start noting in your everyday life. Hearing, seeing. All the six senses, that is our vehicle to perceive life, to touch life, if they can be noticed, then there's a loosening that happens. Then we don't identify with the seeing and the hearing and the we just don't identify with it as much. We don't think that's who we are. We just understand that it's phenomena running its natural course. So looking at our states of mind, what are we telling ourselves? One of the things that's done for me in my practice is I'm a lot less moody. And, you know, I came from a long line of moodiness. And I began to understand from where that moodiness comes from. And so far, it comes from a state of mind. That's as far as I know. So how we appraise our life from our deathbed will be predicated not only on what came to us in life, but how we lived, how we related to the good, the bad, and the ugly. And some wise people have said, do it now. Now is the time. I mean, Anand Tipton said this weekend in his present in his Dharma talk, it's happening again. Remember the time before last, I couldn't remember it after I said it. I don't know what that's about, but all of a sudden it just left me again. It may be that Anand Tipton may not want me to quote him. But I think it's probably, who knows, we don't know. But maybe it'll come to me. So we ultimately define whether we believe we have had a good life or a bad life. But it depends upon the quality of our relationship to our attitudes towards our state of mind. And we practice enough because it takes a process to do that. and we practice enough where we can go within the body and see what's going on at any time. And the more we practice, the easier it becomes to do that. And then we talked, the third thing was memory. And really the true nature of memory, it's not reliable because memory is not in the present moment, and that's where life is lived 100%. It's from the past, and it comes from the mind. The mind is trying to remember it. But again, nothing's wrong with memory if we know its true nature. And we probably all know someone, have heard about people who live in the past. It's a miserable life. It would have to be. Because then we try to stop, we try to keep something going that is impossible to stop. Because it's all flowing. It's all changing. So nothing's the same. So we can touch our difficult memories. I think that's real helpful, has been for me, and to invite him in. And, you know, we've talked about we're beginning to realize that as human beings that we are perfectly imperfect. So we have a past with a memory that without wisdom can absolutely drive ourselves crazy, even though each moment is fresh. There is no past. There is no future. All there is what's in the present moment. So with time, we're able to send gratitude into our whole life. And it's a freedom. It's a freeing. And again, this is experiential. We have to find that out for ourselves. I've practiced enough to, I haven't found anything so far that I've, not all of it, but what I worked on, that I didn't trust. And my trust is not a blind faith, it's from directly experiencing what the Buddha said. If I put my tush to the kush. I like that. So another one, which sounds right, is forgiveness. Forgiveness. And when the memories come up, that's what we do. And there's lots of beautiful Jack Kornfield. Stephen Levine has one in his book. All you have to do is Jack Kornfield forgiveness, and it comes up on Google. That just amazes me. So, forgiveness. Forgiving ourselves and forgiving others. So, just as we are human beings, others are too. And so what I'm beginning to see, and this doesn't happen often, is I'm beginning to see some amount of suffering that comes with making a mistake and not doing it. And when we see it, there's that sacred pause that comes up, and we've heard the teachings of it, then it's easier to work with it, to relate to it. And we can't force forgiveness. But we can start. We can start setting an intention and then listening to some wise people about what to do with it. Because a lot of us have become numb. It's another thing I noticed in me in my practice is I've numbed out. Not all the time, but situations that is difficult for me to deal with, I have found I just get numb. Now that's a big insight for me. Because that's a conditioning. And the armoring is the second skin we have grown, devoid of nerve ends. And so as a result, with the practice, I'm much more alive. Why? Because I have a little bit of wisdom to know what to do with all the phenomena of life that comes to me as a human being. So forgiving ourselves, forgiving others, doesn't mean that we condone bad behavior, bad actions. No. No. Doesn't condone thievery. And this is the part that I want you to remember. It simply addresses the broken heart. The broken heart, our own broken heart, and the broken heart of others. See how that can shift with that kind of understanding. And then another one, guess what, he says, is living in the body. And so that's what we're training in and using the acronym BRAIN. And we do it all the time as much as we can. Because we're recognizing, allowing, and then we're taking it to the body to investigate it. How is the body feeling? Because we've been taught, and we have to find this out for ourselves, that is where we live life completely. And so we investigate, and then we stay awake to see what the process of rain does for us. And so, as we live our lives, we can take this technique to any level. And he does, I'm running out of time, but he does a meditation. I don't know if I did it with him, Stephen Levine, or someone else. But he has a meditation in that book where you're scanning your body. And he says that the healthiest way for us to leave our bodies is through the top of our heads. I don't know if that's true, but one of the things I've been doing is just kind of practicing that, going from my head to the top. I do that anyway. I scan my body. But we can do that, Stephen says, with some practice. And he says it's okay to think of it, the skin in being a light, something shining, anything that's going through us, where we can carry that lightness with us all the way to the top of our heads. And then go to the spaciousness. I love it. I've been practicing that. Because it's a small way of leaving the body. And some of us don't have any trouble at all leaving the body. I mean, we don't talk about it, and, you know, it's not a topic that a lot of people hear, but, you know people can leave their bodies. There's all kinds of research and studies that say that. Really and truly, if I was being honest, ever since I've been meditating, I've wanted to leave my body. Oh, why can't I leave my body? No, I'm pretty well grounded. I can forget it. And that wanting to. But can you see how scary that is for someone who doesn't understand the nature of the body? So, and Stephen says, the most skillful point of departure at the time of death is through the top of our heads. I don't know. And then the last one, which this is the one that I do not want to talk about, think about, but I'm going to anyway. And that is letting go of control. Because guess what? Stephen says many people do not feed themselves the last meal or flush their last bowels. Often the body strength dwindles as it slowly approaches death. And if we don't have a caregiver, that doesn't makes it a little easier. I mean, that really frightens me. Because I see myself, so does others, a controlling person. I want to control. And so working with that issue, I think, is real important. Can we be vulnerable? Some of us can, and I'm talking about myself, can't even make a mistake. They feel threatened somehow. So practicing being vulnerable in any way we can think of has to be helpful. Can we be helpless? Can we be helpless? Whew. That's a big one. Can we be powerless? Well, we may not have a choice. And so like Kabir says, now's the time to look at it. Now's the time to work with it. We need to open to our helplessness and to explore it. And it will soften us, even if can't do it completely, even it will soften us, but just because we understand the wisdom of it. Just hearing loosens it right there. And so Stephen says that process of letting go, of course, even if we can't do that, he says, it turns the difficult to being tolerable. And so with that, I'll finish. Thank you for listening. And now we'll open it up to you.